We return in this exchange now to a story of adoption, international adoption. The interview is from February of 2015. The guest is Claude Nobler, and the story really happened. Parenting is a tricky job in the best of circumstances. Today's guest and his wife went looking for something other than the best of circumstances, but they ultimately learned to make the best of bringing a five-year-old boy from Ethiopia into their family of themselves and two other kids. Claude Nobler is the dad, and he shares the lessons learned, perhaps more by the parents than the kids, in his book, More Love, Less Panic, Seven Lessons I Learned About Life, Love, and Parenting After We Adopted Our Son from Ethiopia. Claude Nobler's voice might sound familiar. It's been heard on public radio before as part of NPR's This I Believe essay series. He was also one of the essayists featured in Dr. Jane Aronson's book about international adoption. We talked to Jane in May of last year, so we're very happy to welcome Claude Nobler to the program today. Hi, Claude.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good to have you. So your This I Believe essay was about enjoying the ridiculous. This doesn't seem like a guy who would naturally get stressed.
No, I think anybody with three children is subject to a little bit of stress. So I can't say that I've been entirely stress-free, but I do try and reduce it as much as I can.
Well, you already had, as we mentioned, two kids of your own, Grace and Clay, and they sounded like they could be a bit of a handful at times. Why consider adoption in the first place?
You know, I never had thought about adoption. I had never planned on adopting. It was in no way on my horizon. And one morning I was reading the paper and having breakfast, and I saw an article about an orphanage in Ethiopia. And, you know, really, I believe to the core of my being that if I had spilt milk on that article, if the paper hadn't come that day, I never would have adopted. But I read the article, and I mentioned it to my wife, Mary, and said, you know, maybe we could do something. And the very sad truth is I really didn't think she'd agree. I thought she would say, oh, you're wonderful, but we can't. And, you know, she would probably tell our friends how wonderful I was. And, you know, when I died, I'd go to heaven, and God would say, oh, you are wonderful. I said, well, I wanted to adopt, you know. And to my shock, she said, you know, we actually could do something like this. And we began that process. But it really was a surprise to me every step of the way.
Did your wife, Mary, surprise herself by how open she was to the idea?
I think she probably did. I think we both had a very sort of, you know, feeling of, well, I guess we could explore it. And, you know, back then, this was 11 years ago, what happened was we contacted an adoption agency and we began to receive videos from Ethiopia. And I will never see anything quite so heartbreaking. Each video might have 20 or 25 kids, and you would see them for a few seconds, and then somebody would say their name and the best guess at their age, and then the next kid would appear. And we just kept thinking, could we adopt that child? Are we going to adopt that 11-year-old, that 4-year-old, that baby? And, you know, we just kept going, and we just never knew for sure that anything would come of it, to be honest. But we kept going forward.
You said that the age is best anybody can figure, so they often don't know how old the kids are?
At that time, yeah. You know, sometimes children's ages were, you know, just a matter of record, and sometimes it was more of a, you know, trying to figure it out as best people could. And we knew that we had certain guidelines that kind of made it a little bit easier for us, which was one, I had been so moved by this article in the New York Times Sunday Magazine section that we knew that we would only consider adopting a child from Ethiopia. And I can't really say why. There are certainly many other forms of adoption, and domestic and international, but we just thought, well, we read this article, this is the article, and we knew we didn't want a child who was older than our oldest son. We didn't want to suddenly have him not be the oldest. And we had a couple of guidelines like that, but really, we just didn't know until one day the adoption agency sent us a photograph, and it was a little, about the size of two stamps, maybe. And we looked at it, and I just kind of put it on my desk, and I was too embarrassed to throw it away, and the kid in the picture really wasn't all that good looking, which is funny because the truth is the child we adopted is spectacular. He's a movie star. He's like just the most handsome kid you can imagine, but that didn't happen to be a very good picture of him. And then they sent us a video, And the video played, and everybody in my house had seen the little picture of that young boy. And when he came on screen, we all pointed at the video and said, "That's him," meaning, "Oh, that's the kid in the picture." And then a second later, we all said the same thing. We said, "Oh, that's him," meaning, that's our son, that's our brother, that's the child that's going to join our family. And I can't begin to tell you why we said it at that moment. I really don't know. And I think in many ways that was the first lesson I got about parenting from my adopted son, which was that even when we think we're in control, we tend not to be in control. We you know, when you have a biological child, you know you're not really in charge of what gender you're going to get and who that child is going to be. But we assumed, surely, we'd be in charge here. We're literally picking a child. And we weren't. Our son appeared before us, and we just knew that that was the boy we were going to adopt. And even when I thought we were in charge, we really, really weren't. And that was an astonishing lesson for me to learn.
And so the kids, by the time obviously you're looking at these videos, they're saying, "Oh, there's our brother." But I mean, what was their first reaction to the idea of bringing another kid into the house?
Well, you know, there were two different reactions. My daughter was very young then; I guess she was about five, and you know, she just thought, "Oh, adopting someone will be like getting a kitten." You know, I mean, she was very sweet, and we really didn't. She seemed fine with it. My eldest son wanted to call all his friends and ask, "What do you think?" And he was a little bit more cautious, and then he gave us the okay.
There's more coming up from Claude Nobler about taking a five-year-old boy from Ethiopia into his family. He tells the story in the book, More Love, Less Panic, Seven Lessons I Learned About Life, Love, and Parenting After We Adopted Our Son from Ethiopia. The rest of the interview coming up on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Claude Nobler and his wife already had two kids but were moved to adopt and make the family that much bigger. Their new child, 5 years old, came from overseas. Claude tells the story in his book, More Love, Less Panic, Seven Lessons I Learned About Life, Love, and Parenting After We Adopted Our Son from Ethiopia. It is like any story about a real family. At times you laugh out loud, at other times you may cry buckets reading the details, particularly about Claude's new young son having to say goodbye to his mother. Claude Nobler visited in February 2015. We got some calls that first time, but can't take any new calls or emails today. Claude, there is some family background here. I understand your mom spent some time in an orphanage. Is that right?
My mom was born in Belgium during World War II and is Jewish and was put into hiding by her parents in a Catholic orphanage. And the really remarkable thing, well, I guess two remarkable things is, one, that when we initially said we're going to adopt a child from Ethiopia, in spite of having been adopted and really rescued in that way, she was really not enthusiastic. She thought, you know, Clay and Grace were her grandchildren, and we had to protect them. And Clay was very uncomfortable with change, and you know, he was the kid who his feet would literally poke through his sneakers before we could force him to buy a new pair of shoes. He just hated change, and she said, "How will he handle that?" And then once Natty joined our family, she thought, "Well, Clay and Grace and Natty are my grandchildren," and immediately she was devoted to Natty and absolutely adored him. And I remember on the first day that they met, when Natty had been here about 5 weeks and barely spoke any English, he came to us knowing only four words of no words of English, and I knew four words of his language. And she was telling him, sitting on the couch, and she said, "Natty, one day you'll grow up and marry a nice Jewish girl." And Natty nodded his head and said, "Okay." You know, he had no idea what she meant. But from the moment he joined our family, my mother fully embraced him, but was very reluctant at first.
What were the circumstances that put Natty out there for adoption?
Natty's father had died when Natty was only about a year old. He had a bad blood transfusion and became ill with AIDS, and his mother became too ill to take care of him when he was about 3 or 4, and he spent some time with other relatives, much older relatives, and then he was put into an adoption, into an orphanage. So by 5, he was looking for a family.
I'm not sure anyone can imagine the mix of emotions here, because obviously there's the joy at taking someone into your family, but the crushing sadness of watching this child say goodbye to his real mother. How was he doing? I mean, what kind of emotional shape did Natty appear to be in when you met him?
I think, and again, you know, everything I learned as a result of adopting Natty taught me how to raise all three of my children. And Natty is truly the most remarkable person I will ever meet. I mean, Natty is, we were really prepared to sort of love and nurture and gently take care of a sweet, sad little boy. And, you know, I talk about in the book, when I have breakfast, I come downstairs very quietly. My daughter would come downstairs so quietly you didn't even know she was there until she would appear right by your side. And my son ate his breakfast, which was the same thing he had eaten since he was 3 years old, and he ate it every day. He still eats it. He's a college freshman. He has the same breakfast now.
Still doesn't like change.
and Natty would come downstairs every morning loudly, blowing kisses to a crowd that wasn't there, and he would say, "Natty Nobler is awake. Thank you very much. I am here. Thank you." At the top of his lungs. And he was exuberant and giddy and loud, and, you know, we just didn't know how to deal with that. So we started doing what we thought of as parenting, which was, we're going to change him so he'll be okay. And Natty was beyond changing. And he, you know, eventually we just had to learn, this is who we have, and this is who we have to love and embrace. He certainly has, you know, to process a lifetime's worth of emotions about leaving Ethiopia, and he, you know, had to experience that. But at his heart, he is just a giddy, exuberant guy, and he is the same guy that he was when he was 5 and 6 and 7.
You know, you mentioned that he had some family that were looking after him, very much older family. Is the age the reason that none of them could take him in?
Yes, he had a grandfather and a grandmother, and they were able to care for him for a little while. He went from being in the largest city in Ethiopia, which is Addis Ababa, to a small village. So when he came to us, we couldn't communicate with him for a while, and we really thought that was going to be a huge issue, that he didn't speak English, and I certainly don't speak Amharic, his language, at the time. And it really, that wasn't a problem. What was difficult to adjust to was his exuberant personality. But finally, we were able to get somebody to translate for us after he'd been with us a few weeks. And we said, well, can you ask him, what does he think? How is he doing? And she came back, and the woman who was translating, and said, he loves his new home. He can't believe how much food and how many toys there are, but he's really worried when you leave the windows open that hyenas will come in. And we had to quickly assure him, look, that is not the problem in Los Angeles. You are going to be okay with the hyena population. So he did have some adjustment to make from a small village in Ethiopia.
Well, and the communication was going to be an issue right off the bat, because it was just you who went to pick him up in Ethiopia. So you actually spent time in the hotel room with him alone, correct?
I did, and you know, I knew 4 words of Amharic, 2 of which were about going to the bathroom. So we really didn't have much that you could communicate by words. And again, I think this is so true of every child. You know, when you are a parent, as soon as you become a parent, you begin worrying. There is a part of me that will worry about my children at any moment of the day. There's just 25% of my brain that's, you know, what if? All 3 of my kids now drive, so if I ever write a sequel to More Love, Less Panic, it should be called Go Ahead and Panic.
Right.
You know?
More panic, more panic.
Right. I have, my daughter is now taking SATs, so we worry about that, and my son is, you know, off at college on the East Coast, so I could worry about the blizzards and all of those things. But the truth is I am terrible at knowing what to worry about. I thought that language and possibly race would be the really, really difficult things we would go through. And the truth is, you know, if you speak four words to a five-year-old boy and two of them are about going to the bathroom, you're really pretty covered for a while. That's a conversation. What I had to learn was how to accept all three of my children exactly as they are. And that took a great deal of doing. And you know, the fact that we spoke different languages, we pantomimed. There were times, one time he asked for something for lunch, and I thought he was asking for a pinto bean or possibly a mento. He was asking for misa, which is a kind of Ethiopian stew. So, you know, we stumbled. There was some confusion. But really, my concerns that we didn't speak the same language and that we were different races, those were nothing. The only time we had a race issue was, you know, one of the few times, I should say, was we were getting groceries and the person bagging our groceries said, are those all your children? And I looked at Clay and Grace and Natty and I said, yes. And he said, all three of them. And I looked at Clay and Grace and Natty and I said, yes. And he leaned forward and he said, one of them is black.
And like you hadn't noticed.
I looked at Clay and Grace and Natty and I said, which one? You know, but again, what we struggled with was just the area of acceptance. And you know, I think what I had to learn was that there is a place for every person in this world. If you are an aggressive child, you may well grow up to, you know, run a startup. If you are more quiet, you may grow up to be a writer or, you know, any number of things. And one of the things we thought about calling the book was, you can't make a giddy Ethiopian into a neurotic Jew, and which we didn't think might sell all that well in certain parts of the country, but it really was what we tried to do. And I think parents so often make the mistake of behaving like mad scientists in 1950s movies. We're going to take a little bit of our daughter's reticence and attach a tube to her brain and get some of that into our son, and we're going to make our son a little bit different, and we're going to make this child neater and this child quieter and this child more aggressive. And none of that happens. You know, in the end, all of my children just are as they are, and when I accept them and take them exactly as they are, then really I can begin loving them instead of forcing them into trying to change. And that's so much better, because if I've learned anything over these, you know, many years of being a parent, is the time passes. They leave, they move on, they change. You have to enjoy them because they grow up and they move on, and you can spend your time with them frantically trying to get them to change, or you can accept that they are who they are and kids outgrow childhood all on their own.
Natty is now 16 years old. The book is about taking him into the family when he was five, an orphan from Ethiopia. The book is More Love, Less Panic. Claude Nobler wrote it. He's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You were talking about the monastic kind of morning that you and your daughter had, and then into this comes Natty with, good morning, everyone! So I'm just curious to know about the friction it might have caused with Clay and Grace when they're looking around thinking, how come he gets to do that and we don't? I mean, was there much of that at the beginning?
You know, I think that Clay and Grace and Natty, all three of them have brother and sister relationships. They, you know, they get annoyed with each other and all of those things. But, you know, I mentioned earlier that Clay was the kid who literally his feet would poke through the sneakers before he'd get new ones. And when Natty had been here about 6 months, I said, Clay, I'm sorry, we have to get you sneakers. And we went and got sneakers. That was it. That, you know, it was just like a normal shopping trip. And I said to him, why was that so much easier? And he said, well, you know, Dad, once you adjust to a whole new brother, sneakers are nothing. And one thing I didn't expect was that bringing this child into my home was the greatest thing I ever could have done for my children. Because, you know, Clay is now a very gregarious guy. He's, you know, joining a fraternity at his college. And he said to me, you know, I never would have been that outgoing if we didn't adopt Natty. Because, you know, Natty sort of pushed him forward. And I don't think they ever thought, how come I don't get to do that? They marveled that Natty was such a larger-than-life personality. But they also sort of found their way. And, you know, Natty says terrible things to, you know, his sister, as I sometimes do to my sister. And, you know, they tease each other. And Grace just laughs and laughs. And, you know, she's seen more of the world, and she is really actively interested in being useful in the world. And, you know, again, all I could see, nobody ever wakes up at 3 in the morning and thinks, oh, I got it right. They think, oh, my God, what did I do wrong? And, you know, it never occurred to me that this idea of bringing another child into my family would make so much more of my two children that I already had, that they just were forced to become the best versions of themselves. And I never imagined that would be the case.
Claude, you go on a riff in the book about all the stuff that parents worry about, like the right preschool for their kids and that kind of stuff. And was that already beginning to fall away as you were collecting Natty in Ethiopia and preparing to come back to L.A.?
Well, it took a while. You know, my mother used to have an expression. She used to take my face in her hands, and she would look, really just directly at me, and she would say, Claude, you're making me crazy. And you know, it wasn't until I had kids that I realized she was actually literally saying the truth. We love our kids so much, they make us crazy. And, you know, I know there are other books about parenting that basically imply if you can teach your five-year-old to play the tuba, they will have a better chance of getting into Harvard. And so we are constantly frantic. We constantly feel like we should be doing more. We should be worrying more. One thing that readers have asked me is, you know, well, what if I don't worry enough? And I think, you know, if you're worried, you're not going to worry enough. You're going to worry enough. And it took me a few years, honestly, of trying to change Natty and realizing that I was trying to push my eldest son to be more aggressive, and I was trying to get Grace to be, you know, slightly different in these ways. And before I thought, wow, none of this is happening. And that was such a remarkable experience for me. And, you know, in the book I also talk about when Natty had his first birthday here in the United States, we threw him a party. And we thought, what if nobody comes? Because he was this kind of wild kid, and he used to have a song called Mishashu. He would sing Mishashu, and whoever was nearby would be expected to say Alaba Laba Laba. And we thought, wow, this is just so weird. And we thought it was an ancient Ethiopian song. It turns out it was just gibberish he had made up. And when we had the party, every kid from his class came, and we thought, well, maybe they're just being nice. And then during the party, some kid from some corner of our house would say, Mishashu! And all through the house, every other kid in the class would say, Alaba Laba Laba. And we realized, you know, we see our kids in this narrow perspective, but if I remember that context is so important, of course other five-year-olds loved who Natty was. He was like the most exciting person they'd ever met. And in the same way, you know, whether my child is shy or exuberant or an athlete or a reader, there is a spot for them. And so, yeah, it took me a while, but eventually I realized I don't have to do most of what I think of as parenting, that the worst parts of parenting are the parts I probably shouldn't be doing anyway.
Claude Nobler is our guest in the Jefferson Exchange. His book about adopting a five-year-old boy from Ethiopia is More Love, Less Panic. And here's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, Julie.
Hi there. I was wondering if possibly all this exuberance that he brought with him into your home from being adopted by you was possibly some sort of a tradition in the culture he came from and was passed on to him by his community, and kind of an acknowledging, like, I am here, is like saying who you are is what matters instead of whatever environment you're finding yourself in. And so it's like a greeting and that kind of an acknowledgement. And I think he might have remembered at least the energy of that. What do you think?
That's such a great observation. I think that, you know, one of the things we found, I was able to meet Natty's mother in Ethiopia, which was, boy, you know, I will never have an experience like that again. You know, she was, it was a remarkable experience because, you know, she put her child on my lap after we had been together for an hour or so, and she said, you are the right family, you are the right father. And she said that because, not because he would get a better life in America or have more opportunities, but because she could see that I already loved him and that he and I had formed a connection. But in that time when we spoke, she and I, she told me a little bit about his father, his birth father. And every part of Natty was already there. You know, there was, I think, a certain, maybe a cultural exuberance, but also his father used to hide his sister's shoes. That was what he did for fun. He would take her shoes and bury a hole, dig a hole and put the shoes in the hole and pretend he didn't know where they were. And, you know, Natty has that kind of spirit, like making practical jokes is just the greatest thing in the world to him. And I think some of it's cultural. I think some of it's biological. I think that you know, I have a good friend in my wife's best friend in Los Angeles who had one child and bragged about how to feed a child. This is how you feed a baby, and you know, you all should use my food. And then she had a second child, and that child wouldn't eat anything. And what she learned was, you know, there's a certain, kids come out the way they come out. And I think Natty, by the time I met him, was not fully formed as a person. He's continued to grow and evolve, but he was kind of who he was going to be in many ways. Same as Grace was different than Clay, and same as I was different than my sister. They, you know, nature versus nurture is not an argument we have at my house. We know that nature won.
Claude Nobler from 2015 talking about adopting a son from Africa. His book is More Love, Less Panic, Seven Lessons I Learned About Life, Love, and Parenting After We Adopted Our Son from Ethiopia. You'll hear the rest of the interview here on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Making the family bigger is the topic of this hour. Claude Nobler and his wife took in a child through adoption 14 years ago now, and a child already walking and talking a language other than English. Claude's book is More Love, Less Panic, Seven Lessons I Learned About Life, Love, and Parenting After We Adopted Our Son from Ethiopia. You know the story. Old interview, no new phone calls today. So, Claude, the process of realizing you had to influence and not control, is this someplace you think you would have gotten eventually with just the bio kids without Natty coming into the house?
You know, I ask myself that a lot, and I've never, you know, I'll never be able to definitively answer that question. I think it would have taken longer. It would have been a less exciting journey in many ways. But, you know, I think that ultimately, you know, at the longer you go through parenting, the more you realize, wow, I don't have quite as much control as I'd like to have. And your response to that really determines how happy you're going to be. You know, I used to lecture my eldest son. He would he would just throw his towels on the floor. And then finally I thought, I can't make this really wonderful kid pick up the towel on the floor. And because I'm a parent, you know, you think to yourself, oh, he's going to be sloppy. No one will marry him. He'll never get a job. You know, you go a little crazy. And one day when he was about 14, he came to me and he said, you know, my room smells. And I said, well, you have wet towels on the floor and, you know, there's a carpet and it makes mildew. And he said, oh, and you know, pretty soon he wanted girls to come over, so he stopped putting towels on the floor. You know, there's this belief that you've got to wrestle your children into adulthood, and I think it can be a much simpler process. And, you know, when his room was dirty and when my three kids' rooms are dirty, I close the door. You know, I'm just not willing to spend the time I have with them wrestling and arguing. And I don't know if I would have come to that realization. I think I might have, but I'm sure glad I came to it earlier because, you know, my eldest son is off at college now. And, you know, you think your kids are the book of your life, but they're really just a chapter, you know.
You know, I have to say that the writing really shines through in this section because when the whole riff about missed chores do not equal eventual prison, that sort of thing really, really kind of puts it all in perspective for us.
Yeah, it's you know, one of the funniest things I feel is when parents say they have to give their children chores so that they'll grow up to be responsible. And, you know, I got two 16-year-olds in the house now, and, you know, there's SATs. They recently learned to drive a several-ton vehicle through the streets of Los Angeles. They are taking biology and chemistry and trigonometry and third-year Spanish, and when they read a book, they read things like, you know, The Scarlet Letter, which I promise you my book, More Love, Less Panic, is far better than The Scarlet Letter. You know, I mean, like, there's no way I could read The Scarlet Letter. And you know, I don't need to give them chores so they'll grow up to be responsible. They're already working really hard. And, you know, there are things that if I come in the house with groceries, my kids just get up and help me bring in the groceries. And, you know, if my daughter is really working hard on a project in SATs, I take her dish from the table to the dishwasher because I don't need to prove a point. And, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't learn responsibility because my mother nagged at me. I learned it because I grew up and, you know, I became mature. And there is this sense that parents have, like, no, you'll fall behind. Your kids, there's only one job for all of the kids. You'd better get it. And I think that's not such a great way to live your life.
You talked, Claude, about the issue of the fact that this is a black-skinned child and the person in the grocery store, you know, he's black, you know, that kind of stuff. But then there's the recent essay in the Washington Post you wrote about having to talk to Natty about him and police. And the way he'd have to behave a little differently from everybody else in the family who went around police. Did you have that conversation?
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. You know, I really do have to say that as a general rule, the role of race in our lives has been, it's part of who Natty is, but it hasn't affected my relationship with him. You know, when Natty wants something from me, you know, which could vary from can I have a new car to can I have, you know, $100 to can I have a new anything, you know, and if I say, no, you can't have that, he says, is it because I'm black? And I always say, no, sweetie, it's because you're Jewish. And, you know, I mean, it's not the defining issue in our lives. But I did have to say to him one day, you know, you're going to be driving and there's a chance you'll be pulled over for no reason. And you have to make sure you know, certainly I taught all three of my children to behave with respect to police officers and really any adult. But I'd say, you know, look, you can't suddenly, you know, get upset that you're being pulled over. And I had to go to a friend of mine who is a very successful African-American man who's about my age. And I said, did I do that right? Is that something I need to do as the father of an African-American child? And he literally fell off of his chair and began, you know, as he sort of stumbled toward me, he said, you must have that conversation with him. And he said, and if you don't, let me do it. Because this man said to me that, you know, he had also been pulled over on multiple occasions. And, you know, Natty hasn't had that experience. But, that was one of those strange things where I had to say, look, I'm not comfortable having this talk with you, but I need to make sure you know this information. And, you know, it's a strange part of life. But I've also had different conversations with my daughter than I've had with my sons. And, you know, that's just part of being a parent.
Given the grouping of three, did any real middle child moments come up?
Never.
Really?
I have to say, you know, partially because my daughter is the only girl, and technically she's the middle child, but only by about 4 months. I like to call them the twins, though I'm the only person who finds that as funny as I do. They never had that problem. They really have, you know, Grace sometimes gets annoyed with Natty. Mostly she really laughs. They kind of, I walk in the room and sometimes I see that they're having a discussion that they don't want, you know, they've got their bond and it's really one of the great pleasures of my life. And I certainly think that there are times when Grace wishes Natty would, you know, just quiet down, and there are times when Natty has his differences, but no, they never really, they're so different that sibling rivalry wasn't an issue.
You mentioned that that Natty, when young, had the confidence of a 4-star general and the charisma of Elvis, and it sounds like he was could be fairly bossy at times. Like, hey, let's do this. You do this. You do this right now.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. But he literally, it's funny, I haven't thought about this in ages, he literally would try to lead mutinies in PE class. The teacher would say, today we're all going to play soccer. And he would begin standing up and saying, let's play dodgeball. And he would frantically try and convince the class to revolt. So, yeah, he had lots of charisma.
All right, so did his language skills come along at the same rate as his bossy pantsness?
You know, he learned very quickly. I remember when he was here about certainly less than 2 months, we were leaving the house, and he had a little toy car, and I said, Natty, put your toy in your pocket. And he did, and I thought, when did I ever say the word pocket to him? How did he possibly learn that? I never learned more than the four words of Amharic, and he mastered, you know, English in no time at all. He's now studying Amharic again, and he seems to really, he had lost that language, but he's really picked it up quickly. But I do remember, you know, we were going to drive to San Diego, and he had been here, I'm going to say 4 or 5 weeks. And as the car was pulling out, he said, no, 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 Dad, no, not that way, this way. And I drove a little longer, and he said, no, 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 this way. And I finally pulled the car over, and I said, Nanny, have you ever been to San Diego? Like, how do you know the way to San Diego? And he said, what is San Diego? So he had more confidence than perhaps he warranted. But I will say, for years we tried to sort of get him to tone that down. And he recently started a school newspaper, like all on his own. He is the president of the sophomore class. And he said to me about a year ago that he wouldn't want to be president of the United States. And when I asked why not, he said, just not enough power. So he's already working on making his first billion. And, you know, he's the kid who's going to support me if the book doesn't do well enough.
Wow, he's really got a plan. Looking ahead all the time, for sure. But how much does he look back? You mentioned his interest in studying Amharic just now. But how much does he remember about his life in Ethiopia? How much does he ask about it? How much does he explore it?
He remembers an astonishing amount. I mean, he remembers a hyena, coming into his grandmother's house. He remembers, bits and pieces, and they'll sort of pop into his head again, as I guess everybody does with memory. And he's taken a real interest in it, which is really lovely to see. You know, he said, can I study Amharic? And it's not easy to find somebody to teach Amharic, but we found a guy, and he comes over, and Natty works at it, and we believe, if everything goes right, that he's going to go back to Ethiopia this summer and try and really learn the language and see what he can of his past. And, it's a really remarkable and wonderful thing. And to also my two other children really are planning and sharing on that and being part of that trip. And, my family is as large as the world. And that's a remarkable thing to be able to say. Again, I think it speaks to, we worry so much as parents, and we never know the things that will work. You can do 1,000 things for your children that are designed to teach them to grow up to be good adults. And, I just remember bits and pieces that I took from seeing my parents. I don't think I learned anything from the talks about relationships that my parents had with me, but I always watched how they behaved with each other. And that's just something I continue to model, probably.
Which ended up being a big transition for you, didn't it? I mean, that you had to realize, oh, wait, I'll be the good example, because obviously the words themselves are not going to do it.
Yeah, it's really, really hard not to believe your panic, not to believe your, I've got to make this happen, I've got to make that happen. A good friend of mine has a kid in fourth grade, and he's, really believes that if the kid doesn't make the travel baseball team, it's a make-or-break moment. And, one thing I'm well aware of is that every 2 years, I look back on what I used to be frightened about and think, well, that was silly. I met when I was doing a reading in New Jersey, a woman approached me, and she was panicked because her child wasn't on a good nap schedule. You're a successful person. You probably don't attribute much of your success to the nap schedule you had when you were two, or, the fact that you were done using the pacifier at the appropriate age, or that you were reading at an appropriate age in kindergarten. When I put all of those things to the side, I get to experience the remarkable pleasure of who my kids are. And I get to just love them and share in their triumphs and commiserate with their difficulties and just treasure who they are. And that's the greatest gift. And I got that from adopting a child from Ethiopia, but I got it for all three of my children.
But how does Mary deal with this? I mean, are there ever any disagreements like, okay, Claude, it really is time for him to pick up the towels off the floor in his room?
Yeah, we have to occasionally remind each other. We seem to rotate that feeling of, okay, this has got to stop. We have got to really get this thing going. But, I'm very fortunate in that my wife and I essentially lead a very traditional marriage, except our roles are completely reversed. She's off at work right now doing I don't know what in finance. I've never really understood it. And, so I have a lot of sway with the kids. And, at the end of the day, they're pretty terrific. Now, they have different natures, I mean, I don't think that Natty instantly thinks, I can take out this garbage and help my parents. But, he does what he does, and they're really good. And I think that, as that old saying, the proof is in the pudding, I think my wife is mostly okay with it. We did have to spend 2 or 3 years frantically trying not to yell at him. And we, I remember we would go into a, like this tiny little room we used to have, and we would just hold each other and say, I can't do it. I'm going to scream and yell all the time. And, you know, we had a contest. We said, let's just not say no to him for the whole day. And my wife lasted 6 seconds before she said no. And I would judge her, but I only lasted four. And that is a literal truth. I said, we are not going to say no to Natty. Bump, bump, bump. No, Natty, put that down. And, you know, I mean, that's another thing I had to learn, which is, you know, nobody parents perfectly. And you know, to understand that I'm going to be sloppy and make mistakes and yell at them, and I can go back and I could say, oops, got a little crazy there. Sorry about that. And then they learn to apologize when they're wrong. You know, I'm not expected to be perfect.
I guess this question is answered by your essay in Jane Aronson's book of last year. But do you recommend international adoption?
I recommend having kids, loving your kids, adopting. I recommend embracing the joy of being with the people you're around. For some people, adoption is just the greatest, most wonderful experience. It certainly was for me. For some people, having children is a great and wonderful experience. I think that there are any number of ways to enlarge your world, and I'm very grateful that that turned out to be mine.
And are there flat spots in your forehead from all the things you went about for doing as a parent?
There are a couple of dents from hitting a couple of doors with my head, but that's expected. Nobody expects a man of my age not to have a few dents in the head, right?
That's right. Sounds good. The book is called More Love, Less Panic, 7 Lessons I Learned About Life, Love, and Parenting After We Adopted Our Son from Ethiopia. Claude Nobler wrote it, and he's been a good guest. Claude, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.